Chapter 10.
If it wasn't for Edwin, I might never have met Millie. Ed was on her way to have breakfast with Darlene one morning. Come with? She asked. When Ed and I walked into that sleazy diner, I was glad I'd come. The restaurant was filled with working girls, male and female. We were welcomed with a boisterous roar. I got kissed and teased. Darlene pulled Edwin down on her knee and feigned threats to all the other femmes to leave her butch alone. It was fun when we all played like that. Darlene told me about the last television episode of The Fugitive. The real killer is caught and David Jansen gets vindicated and can stop running. Ed was arguing with a woman sitting across from us about the riots in Newark and Detroit. Violence is as American as cherry pie. That's what Rap Brown says. Ed pounded her fist on the tabletop. They're a dress rehearsal for the revolution. The woman raised both her hands in surrender. Okay, all right. Don't blow your cool. Everyone was trying to shout over the jukebox, which was turned up real loud. The Beatles were singing Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. I tapped Darlene on the shoulder. What's that song mean, anyhow? She laughed. How the hell should I know? My eyes burned from exhaustion. I asked Edwin to come outside with me and listen while I kick-started my Norton. It wouldn't kick over whenever it was chilly and damp. I didn't know why. It was over Ed's shoulder that I really saw Millie for the first time. She was standing there, just looking at me. Ed glanced at Millie and then, like a good friend, Ed walked away. I have a few mental photographs I can see in my mind's eye. One of them is of Millie, hands on her hips, looking at me up and down as if the bike and I were one lean machine. Her body language, the gleam in her eyes, the tease in her smile, all combined into an erotic femme challenge. Millie set the action into irresistible motion by lifting one eyebrow. Without a word, I took off my brown leather jacket and offered it to her. Neither of us were in a hurry. Once this dance began, there was no reason to rush and every reason to take it deliciously slow. I helped her on with my jacket. I think I fell in love with her the moment she swung her leg over the bike and settled in behind me. The way two women relate on a motorcycle is part of their sex together. And she was very, very good on a bike. From that moment on, I was her butch and she was my femme. Everybody knew it. So did we. We just fit and the sparks flew. We were a couple of tough cookies. And together we felt unbeatable. It wasn't just bravado. We matched each other in nerve. For a stone butch and a stone pro to survive, they have to tough it out in the world. We walked our talk and we appreciated it in each other. Slow dancing in dawn, making fierce love, leaning together as one with the motorcycle into a deep curve. It just got better and better. One morning, Millie didn't come to the bar after work as usual. Neither did Darlene or her friends. All of us were worried. Darlene finally pulled up in a car. Millie was bleeding in the back seat. Her face was all busted up. I got in and held her head in my lap. We had to take her to a goddamn veterinarian to get her arm set in a cast. We were afraid the emergency room staff might have called the cops. It was an off-duty cop who beat her. It took Millie a long, long time to get her confidence back. It changed her. Every beating changes you. I got a day shift at a plastic pipe factory. Millie worked as a temp at a bendery. Everything was okay. It was just different. Then I got pink slipped and Millie told me casually that she was thinking of going back to dancing in the clubs to get us through. No. I thought that made my position very clear, but the way Millie was coming around the kitchen table after me in response made me retreat. She backed me up against the sink and came right up under my nose. "Nobody," she sputtered in rage. "Nobody tells me how to run my life. Not you, not anybody. You got that?" I conceded she had a point. "And when did you get so goddamn morally righteous all of a sudden?" She paced around the kitchen. "Fuck you," I yelled. She knew it wasn't true. "You just said that to hurt me." She conceded I had a point. "It's just so fucking dangerous for you to go back to that life," I argued. "Don't you remember why you quit?" That last thing I said was a big mistake. I realized it when she picked up the nearest dish and sent it sailing across the room in my direction. "You condescending motherfucking son of a bitch," she shouted. "Don't you think I know the life better than you do, you bastard?" We were both quiet for a moment. I decided to do the dishes. Millie leaned up against the kitchen counter with her arms folded across her breast, watching me. "I just can't stand the thought of any guy, anybody hurting you," I said as quietly as I could. Millie grabbed a dish towel and started drying the dishes. It was a good sign. "How do you think I feel?" she asked. "When you're a bouncer at the bar on the weekends and there's a fight," she got herself all worked up again. "For Christ's sake, what's the fucking difference between you being a bouncer and me working as a hostess?" "A dancer," I clarified. "You know I'd be worried every fucking minute you were late from your shift." "Well, fuck you then. That's your problem, baby, not mine." Millie did a double take at me and dropped her gaze. I thought maybe she was sorry she had said that. "I'm sorry," she told me. "It's just I can't stand it when someone does this moral thing with me." "God damn you," now I was yelling. "Ever since you met me, you've been waiting for me to make one fucking mistake, say one wrong thing about you being a pro." "An ex-pro," she said sarcastically. "It's no goddamn joke. I never laid any bullshit on you about it. You know that. But every time we have a fight, you're lying in wait, just hoping you make me so mad I'll make a mistake. Then you could leave." Millie smiled for the first time since I came home and told her I had been laid off. "What's so funny?" I asked sullenly. "I like you," she said softly. I turned back to the sink and shook my head so she could see that I was exasperated. She turned me around. There was a warm look on her face. She kissed me on the mouth. I kissed her back. Then I turned around to finish the dishes. She turned me around again. "We have to pay the rent. It's just for a while. I don't like it any better than you do." I laughed. "Bullshit." She raised one eyebrow, daring me to pursue it. "There's parts of the life you like a lot," I told her. "I know that." Millie looked amazed. "Do you really know that?" I nodded. She put her arms around me. "We fit perfectly." She ran her hands up and down my back. "Remember those old spy movies where they cut a playing card into two jagged pieces? Then when the spies met, they put the two pieces together. That's how pros and stone butches are. We just fit, you know." She kissed me again. She was a great kisser. And she grabbed a handful of my hair and pulled my head back and really looked at me before she spoke again. "You're the only woman in the world who hurt almost the same way I do, you know." "I did." "And another thing," she kissed my throat. "You're the tenderest lovers in the world." She unbuttoned my shirt as she spoke. The talking was over. The conversation had just begun. We conducted electricity between our bodies. Later in bed, I held her in my arms and remember our fight as if it had been a dream. "When will you start?" I asked her. Her body tensed. "I'll call Darlene tomorrow." I spent all week in a panic, putting an application at the plants. If I could just get a job before the end of the week. Thursday, Millie told me, real casually at dinner, she was going to start work with Darlene the next night at the Pink Pussycat. I poked my meatloaf with a fork. "Don't start," she warned me. I didn't say anything. We ate in silence. On Friday, I left for the bar in the early evening while she was still sleeping. I packed a lunch for her and stuck little red paste on hearts in the brown paper bag. Everybody at the bar knew I was upset. The butchers patted me on the back and told me to cheer up. The femmes just kind of smoothed under the lapels of my suit coat and held me in their gaze for a moment. A more complicated message. Then Justine called me across the room by her curly index finger. She grabbed me firmly by my tie and wouldn't let it go. "Cut it out," she ordered. "What?" I said, she gripped my tie more firmly. "Cut out all this drama. She doesn't need it, honey. And if you want to lose her, this is just the way to do it." I felt stunned. "I don't get it," I answered honestly. "Grow up," she concluded and let go of me. By the time the sun came up, I was excited about seeing Millie. When she arrived with the other dancers from the club, I was anxious to leave together, but they all spent a long time in the bathroom together. Finally, each of the women came out, hesitantly leaving the camaraderie of their group and joined us one-on-one. Millie's head rested on my back the whole ride home. I was afraid she was asleep and might fall off on a curb. Once we got home, I ran her a hot bubble bath. I went into the bedroom to tell her it was ready, but she'd already fallen asleep. I wasn't tired. I woke her up around 6 p.m. to eat dinner. I made her favorite meal, but she just kind of picked at it with a fork. "You okay?" I asked her. "Yeah, sure," she answered, just like I would have. "You coming to the bar after work?" She was quiet for a minute. "Can I meet you at home? I'm just so tired." I instantly grew sullen because I was scared. "What's wrong with meeting me at the bar?" "Can we talk about this another time?" she asked me. "Yeah, sure," I said. That night I packed her lunch with little red hearts on the bag. She picked it up and smiled at the bag, not me. I felt strange the next morning when the other woman came to work to meet their butches. As each person asked me where Millie was, I grew more defensive and angry. Millie and I fought about it in the morning. "Did it ever occur to you that I might be uncomfortable at the bar?" Millie shouted. "That had never occurred to me at all." "Why?" I asked, puzzled. "Because his attitude towards us." "What are you talking about? Lots of women at the bar are pros. I was aware I was shouting and I wish I would stop. They're hometown girls who turn tricks to pay the rent. They're ashamed of what they do. They aren't into the life the same way the rest of us. We're different." I had never thought about it. I was reeling. "Get it, baby? That's your people, not mine." Her eyes' cold tone chilled me. "My people are the women I dance with. That's who watches my back." Millie always was a pro's pro. I grabbed my leather jacket and took the bike far outside the city limits before I pulled off the road and sat down to think. The rest of the week, we were super polite to each other around the apartment. I couldn't get Millie to respond to me. She wouldn't play. "I don't know," I told Edwin. "I'm used to being the one who shuts down." "Give her time," Ed said. "You both just need time." Sunday morning, I was almost asleep when Millie came in. She was in the bathroom for a long time before I realized something was wrong. She turned her face away when I came into the bathroom door. I sat down on the tile floor. "You okay?" I asked her. "Yeah, baby. Go to sleep." After a few minutes, I got her to look at me. Her face was swollen on one side. A little trickle of blood was leaking from her split lip. I got a washcloth and ran cold water. I stood in front of her until she let me know it was all right to touch her face. She wrapped her arms tight around my waist. I dropped to my knees and held her. Then she pulled away and got up and ran a bath. I got the message. I went to bed. I was awake when she got undressed and lay down, but I didn't show it. She knew. I think it surprised me more than her when I started to cry. She could deal with me crying about as well as I could deal with her tears. She went into the kitchen and made coffee. I stayed in bed. She brought a cup of coffee to share and sat down on the bed. Her tone was gentler than I expected. "You remember the time I got beat up real bad and I stopped working at the clubs? You know, after we met?" "Yeah, sure." "I wonder what the point was." "Remember when you held me and told me you would protect me? You wouldn't let anyone hurt me?" I winced. Millie put her hand reassuringly on my back. "What you said wasn't wrong, baby. That's what everyone wants to hear when they've been hurt. The only problem was, you believed it yourself. You can't protect me, sweetheart. I can't protect you. I think you're having trouble dealing with that lately." I didn't deny it. I didn't say anything. After a while, I drifted to sleep. I got up to go to work. Millie was sleeping on the couch. I covered her with an afghan. I loved her so damn much. What she said was true. I wanted to protect Millie, and I knew I couldn't. I couldn't even defend myself very well. I was losing my nerve. I was scared, even at work. The night before, just after closing time, young Sal has staggered into the bar, covered with so much of his own blood that we almost didn't recognize him. He was a victim of a Marine who was tying young femme gay men to lampposts and slicing them with razor blades, hundreds of small cuts. Then the Marine would go sit in the restaurant across from the street from the bar, waiting to see if anyone would dare stop him. Everyone knew he'd be skulking around, but none of us expected him to walk right into the bar on a crowded Saturday night. I hardly realized what was happening at first. The payphone rang. Justine yelled that it was for me and told me to hustle up. It was Millie. I put one finger into my ear to hear her better over the noise of the jukebox when I saw the Marine cutting right through the crowd towards me. He pointed his index finger at me and mumbled, "Take it easy," I soothed him. Booker smashed the guy on the head with a bottle of ketchup. He said later it was the only thing he could grab in such a hurry. It did a fine job. I think it gave everyone a lift to see the Marine out cold, covered in ketchup. The following weekend, we heard the Marine had been found dead. No one knew who did it. When I got home that morning, I reenacted the whole scene for Millie. Deep down, I wanted so much to make love to her. I had wanted her all week, but we went to sleep still talking about what a hero Booker had been. The next Friday, we fought so bitterly. I don't even remember what started it. It doesn't matter. What mattered was that it was the kind of fight that's so painful it takes the top layer of skin off your heart. I try to go for a ride. My bike wouldn't kick over. I storm off for a walk around the block. When I came back, Millie was gone. I sat in the apartment for a long time in the dark. I was really upset. My brain wasn't working too clearly. I remember that. That's when I realized how we were running off the rails. I suddenly felt I had to apologize to her, to explain, or I'd lose her forever. So I went down to the Pink Pussycat. I don't know what I was thinking. I paced outside the club, smoking a cigarette. You couldn't see the inside the bar because the windows and doors were papered with shiny foil. As I opened the door, Darlene saw me immediately. She had her arm around a sailor's neck. She looked up at Millie, who was dancing in a little cage above the bar. Millie had seen me too. Maybe I thought Millie wore an outfit when she danced. It wasn't that it mattered, I just realized I'd never wonder about it. I took the sights and sounds and smells of the world in which she worked. I listened to the music she danced to. I never loved a man the way that I loved you. I had been in so many sleazy bars, there was something familiar and commonplace about it all. I could see immediately who was working the room. It was, of course, the woman. But you could tell more by their attitude than their sex. This was, after all, a job. It paid well for women who could take care of themselves. And Millie could take care of herself. But I knew I'd made a fatal error walking in the door. The last mistake I would be allowed to make. I realized in that moment it was too late for us. I went back to our apartment to wait for her. Millie came home within hours. She left the apartment door open as she stormed up to me. I must have sensed what was coming because I buried my hands deep inside my pockets. She slapped me hard across my face. "I'm sorry," was all I could say. I really, really meant it. "I'll bet you are," Millie said. Her voice was cruel and cold because she was hurting too. "Do you get to see everything you wanted?" "I'm sorry, baby," I tried to explain. "I didn't go there to hurt you. I wanted to start over. I made a mistake." "You sure did," she said. Her voice was quieter. She looked at me quizzically. "What were you thinking of?" Then she stopped being angry for a moment. "How did you feel when you walked in there, Jess? Did it hurt you?" "It's funny," I said. "I sort of felt closer to you right then. And I was thinking about how brave you are." "Brave?" Millie narrowed her eyes. "Yeah, I don't think I could be strong enough to fight without my clothes on." Millie stood and looked at me without speaking. Then she went into her bedroom and started throwing clothing into a suitcase. I didn't move from where I stood. When she came out, she acted like she was looking around for whatever else she wanted to take, but I knew she was stalling. "Is there anything I can say?" I asked, already knowing the answer. Millie softened her expression and came closer. "I'm sorry, baby," I told her as tears streamed down my face. She came into my arms for the last time. "I know I made a big mistake tonight, Millie. I'm sorry I hurt you." She shook her head and took my face in her hands. "It was a mistake, but that's all it was. I've made some pretty big ones with you. That's not why I'm leaving." She went over to her suitcase and took out the porcelain kitten she left home with 15 years before and put it down on the coffee table near me. She came back and put one hand on my cheek. "I just don't think it's going to be much different than it is. Not for now anyway," she explained. "I want to leave before we break everything." Millie brushed my cheek with her lips. Then she walked through that open door. She was gone. I sat down on the couch and cried because I just didn't know what else to do. I jumped up and ran downstairs and outside, but she was already gone. Besides, I didn't know how to change everything back the way it was. I went back upstairs, opened a bottle of beer, and sat on the edge of the bed. That's when I recall the weekend before when Millie had called me on the payphone at work. Just at the moment I realized the Marine was coming towards me, I forgot. It sounded like she was crying. I just didn't remember, with all the excitement, to ask her why she had called. Now I'd give anything to know. The telephone rang. I ran to pick up the receiver. It was Edwin. Of course she knew. Darlene had been waiting downstairs with the car while Millie came upstairs to pack. Darlene wanted Ed to tell me how sorry she was and how much she loved me, too. "You okay?" Edwin asked me. "I don't think so," I told her. There was a long silence. "You were great together," Ed said. Yeah, we were, weren't we? She really loved you, Ed reminded me. Remember when you used to pack those lunches for Millie in the brown paper bags with those little red hearts on them? How did you know that? I asked. Did the other girls tease her about it? Hell no, Edwin said. They were jealous. You made it hard on the rest of us, Butches. We all had to start packing love lunches. Anyway, promise me you won't tell Darlene this? I promised. Millie told Darlene that she thought she might have been loved once or twice in her life. But nobody had ever cared about her as good as you did. I took a deep breath. Did she say that a long time ago? No, Ed said, catching my drift. Recently. Ed, I hurt. I know, Ed said gently. I'm sort of in the same boat. Things are kind of rough right now with me and Darlene. Why is it so hard? I felt confused. I don't know, Ed sighed. I guess love's never easy, but it's different between a butch and a pro. Ed sounded lost in her own thoughts. Love with no illusions. There was a long silence. We both took deep breath. My bike isn't running. Go to work tonight, Edwin advised. I'll meet you there in the morning. We'll take a look at it. Ed, I said. I really fucked up this time. Nah, she reassured me. You got a little more growing up to do. I just don't know if I can do it, I told her. My friend laughed. You got no choice.